Chapter 15.
It was a morning in April that everything seemed to change at once. The birds chirped loudly outside my window at dawn. I rolled around lazily in bed. The sheets felt cool, the air smelled sweet. I reached for a cigarette, but the thought revolted me. I decided to take a long shower instead. As I brushed my teeth, I glanced in the mirror and had to look a second time. Beard stubble roughed my cheeks. My face looked slimmer and more angular. I stripped off my t-shirt and BVDs. My body was lean and hard. My hips had melted away. I could actually see muscles in my thighs and arms I never knew I had. Were the hormones stimulating muscles or just revealing them? This was almost the body I'd expected before puberty confounded me. Almost. I remembered the girls in high school who moaned because their breasts were small. I envied them for being flat-chested. That was within my reach now. I had saved $1,600 over the winter toward breast reduction surgery. I took a hot, soapy shower, enjoying the feel of my hands on my skin. It had been so long since I'd been at home in my body. Soon, that was going to change. As I combed my hair in front of the mirror, it occurred to me that I might be able to go to a barber shop. Our perfect DAs, 1 inch long all over, were maintained in the kitchens of hairdresser friends. I'd bought an old Triumph motorcycle during the winter from a guy at work. I took it out of the garage, put a fresh quart of oil in it, and drove it cross town to a barbershop in a neighborhood I'd never have to come back to if it turned out badly. The barber smiled at me. "I'll be with you in just a minute, sir." I tried to hide my excitement as I leafed through a copy of Popular Mechanics. I'd never dared enter men's turf like this before. The barber snapped a huge red cloth in the air. "Sir?" He beckoned for me to sit in the chair. He covered me with the red material and pulled it snug around my neck. "A trim?" I looked at myself in the mirror. "Well, maybe something different. Maybe it's time for a change." The barber smiled. "That's up to you." "I don't know, something neat." The barber smoothed back my hair and pursed his lips. "What about a flat top?" "Yeah, that would be a change." The electric razor buzzed across the top of my DA from back to front. Clumps of hair fell on my nose. The barber brushed them off with the soft hairs of a brush. He clipped and trimmed my hair until it formed a perfectly symmetrical flat top. He brushed me off thoroughly. I started to get up. "Not yet," he said. He leathered my sideburns and the back of my hairline with shaving cream and scraped a clean line with a straight razor. He toweled the last bits of leather from my neck. Just when I thought he must be finished, he splashed a little bay rum on his palms and rubbed it on my cheeks. He shook powder on the brush and swept it across the back of my neck. With a flourish, he pulled away the red cloth that covered me and gave me a hand mirror so I could see the back of my hair. "What do you think, my friend?" This time, I didn't try to hide my excitement. I was passing. It was time for the most important test of all. The men's room. I walked around the department store until I couldn't stand it any longer. I paced outside the men's room. What would happen if I walked in? I'd have to find out sooner or later. I pushed open the door. Two men stood in front of urinals. They glanced at me and looked away. Nothing happened. I found an empty stall and locked the door. They could see my feet if they looked. Did men ever sit down to urinate? I flushed the toilet to cover the sound. I immediately felt something wet and cold against my ass and thighs. The toilet was overflowing. I jumped up, but it was too late. My Levi's were soaked. I rebuttoned my jeans and hurried out of the men's room. I pushed my way through the crowds of shoppers and made my way back to my Triumph. All I wanted was to drive home, strip off my jeans, and shower off the feeling of stupidity. I sat down on my bike and thought about it. It hadn't been so bad, really. Now I knew better than to flush the toilet without paying attention to the water level as it rose. But I thought back to the moment I'd walked into the men's room. They hardly noticed me. I could go to the bathroom whenever and wherever I needed to without pressure or shame. What an enormous relief. At first, everything was fun. The world stopped feeling like a gauntlet I had to run through. But very quickly, I discovered that passing didn't just mean slipping below the surface. It meant being buried alive. I was still me on the inside, trapped in there with all my wounds and fears. But I was no longer me on the outside. I remember the morning I left work at the macaroni plant just before dawn. I was walking up Elmwood toward my bike. A woman on the sidewalk ahead of me looked over her shoulder nervously. I slowed my pace as she crossed the street and hurried away. She was afraid of me. That's when I began to understand that passing changed almost everything. Two things didn't change. I still had to work for a living, and I still lived in fear, only now it was the constant terror of discovery. I never realized what a small town Buffalo could be. "Where'd you go to school, Jesse?" Eddie asked me after we finished unloading cartons from a truck. Should I lie or tell the truth? "Bennett," I answered honestly. "No kidding. When did you graduate?" I fumbled for an answer. I had lied on my job application for this truck delivery position. I said I'd graduated from high school. I transferred my junior year. "Yeah? When?" "Oh, I don't know. Around 65, I guess." "No kidding. My brother-in-law went to Bennett around the same time. His name's Bobby. Played football. You know him?" "Bobby the rapist." My fists clenched and I ground my teeth. "No, I don't think so." Eddie nodded. "No loss. He could really be an asshole if you ask me. You're right?" "Yeah, just a little sick, that's all." "Well, sit down a minute," Eddie said. "Listen, Eddie, I'm going to run to the store for something." And then I walked away. I just kept walking, faster and faster. I was running from my own past. I guess I could have left the city, but it felt as though I'd fall off the edge of the earth. So I stayed. But I always had to be looking over my shoulder in public, afraid I'd run into someone who knew me as a woman. Sometimes I didn't see them until they saw me, like the time Gloria and the kids were shopping downtown. I was an aisle away in the men's department. Gloria recognized me just a moment before I saw her. Her jaw dropped. She grabbed Kim and Scotty by their hands and tried to drag them away. Scotty got scared and cried. Kim called my name. "Jess! It's Jess!" I came up to Gloria and put my hand on her shoulder. She pulled away in horror and wrapped her arms around Scotty and Kim as though she was protecting them from Count Dracula. "Gloria, for Christ's sakes, I'm just trying to survive, you know. It's not such a big deal." "Get away from me. What have you done?" she asked me in a strange, low voice. "What are you doing?" "Trying to live, Gloria. Give me a break, will ya?" Kim reached out to me, but Gloria grabbed her hand and squeezed it. "Come on, Kim, Scotty," Gloria said, pulling them toward the door. "You're really sick, you know that. You really need help." I turned up my palms in a gesture of exasperation. "Gloria!" People nearby stopped to watch. Kim broke loose and ran toward me at full speed. I lifted her into my arms and hugged her tightly. "Do you still love me?" she whispered. I kissed her nose, more than ever. I put her down and she ran back to Gloria. "Ex?" a salesman asked me. "Huh?" "Ex-girlfriend?" he He nodded with his chin toward the door. She's an ex, all right, I answered. I got a steady gig at a bindery as a mechanic's apprentice. The guy who interviewed me looked me up and down real hard. I felt color rise in my face. You look like a clean-cut young man, he concluded. Only a short time before, I had been a monster. Having a job was the good news, but there wasn't much else to do or anyone to do it with. That was the bad news. My greatest recreation was riding my motorcycle. I decided to buy a really nice bike. Early on Saturday afternoon, I rode to the west side to take a look at a Harley Sportster I saw advertised in the newspaper. Ask for Mike, the ad read. You know about bikes? Mike asked me. We squatted next to the bike in his driveway. I said yes, but I felt I was lying. It's funny, a guy gets a Honda 50 mini bike and he talks like he's an expert on bikes. A woman could ride a full dress Harley all her life and she still feels like she's faking her end of the conversation. He told me he loved that bike and I could tell by the way he touched it that he meant every word. He hated to sell it, he told me, but he fell in love with a woman who made him choose between her and the bike. He made the right decision. I handed Mike a wad of bills and revved the engine. Take her up to Canada, he suggested. You'll be across the Peace Bridge in 10 minutes and you can really open her up on those roads. I put on my helmet, waved, and drove away. I stopped at Ted's for a foot-long hot dog. I sat on top of a picnic table outside, surrounded by gulls, impatiently waiting for the end of my bun. I could see the line of cars at the Peace Bridge. How many hundreds of times had I gone to Canada this way? But passing as a man meant I hadn't been able to cross the Peace Bridge because I didn't have a draft card. The Vietnam War had just officially ended. It seemed amazing to me that the people of that tiny country had won against such monstrous odds. Maybe all those rallies Teresa had attended helped. President Ford was expected to pardon the draft resistors so they could finally come home. But I still couldn't cross the border. I had no valid ID in case I was pulled over at customs. I opened my wallet and looked at my ID, birth certificate, driver's license. They were all clearly marked female. How could I get ID as a male? Getting identification required identification. I couldn't even open a checking account without some sort of ID. A credit card was out of the question. I felt like a non-person. Even outlaws probably had more ID than me. I turned my license over and looked at the expiration date. July 1976. It was valid for 14 more months. How could I get a license marked female renewed as male? What would happen to me if I got stopped by state troopers on a lonely road in the dead of night and handed them this license? But what if I was caught driving without a license? Either option sounded like a nightmare. Yet, it was impossible to work or live in Buffalo without some form of transportation. I started to cross the Niagara River, longing to open up my Harley on those roads I knew so well. A feeling of claustrophobia choked me. Even as my world was expanding, it was shrinking. My beard grew in full color, blonde streaked with red and brown and white. In the open fields of life, my beard was a bush to hide behind. Almost no one seemed to recognize me anymore when I was out in public. I hated my breasts more than ever. Binding them every day had flattened the muscles and they hurt. But I had finally saved up $2,000. I called the surgeon Dr. Monroe had referred me to. I told him I wanted to be flat-chested. Yes, yes, he said, breast reduction. Is it going to be very painful? Will I be out of work a long time? No, he told me. It's not a radical mastectomy. We make an incision and remove some of the fatty tissue. Although you'll be uncomfortable, you should be back at work within a week or two. I felt a little queasy, but all surgical descriptions made me feel that way. Do you have the money? He asked. I did. I was ready. I scheduled the surgery and left work Tuesday pretending to be ill. Tuesday night, I lay in bed and stared at the ceiling. I felt anxious, but not scared. I was excited at the thought of feeling good in my body once again. I wished Theresa could have come this far with me. Why couldn't I have had one night to make love with her while I felt comfortable in my body? Theresa. Once I thought of her, it was too late to pull her memory away. I tossed and turned. Wherever I was going, I knew I was headed there alone. That next morning, I arrived at the hospital before my scheduled appointment to fill out the necessary forms. "Who are you here to see?" the admissions nurse smiled. "Dr. Costanza." Her expression cooled. "Just a moment, please." She returned 5 minutes later. The doctor wasn't in. No arrangements seemed to have been made, but she told me to go to the nurse's desk on the 6th floor. There were 3 nurses on the 6th floor desk. "I have an appointment for surgery with Dr. Costanza." The nurses glanced at each other. One sighed. "There's no room ready for you right now. You'll have to prep yourself in the bathroom." I hesitated. "I don't know what you mean." "Just a minute," she said. She came back with a hospital gown, razor, and Betadine. "Shave your underarms, chest hair, and pubic hair with this and then put on the gown." "Pubic hair?" She frowned. "That's the procedure. I hope they didn't do the wrong surgery on me." I figured I'd have time to consult with someone before the operation began. "Don't go in there," one of the nurses cried out as I neared the men's room. I turned towards the women's bathroom. "No, not there either," another called out. I stood stock still. They found a room for me. I washed myself with Betadine and shaved my armpits for the first time in many years. When my underarm hair had first grown, my mother insisted I shave regularly. This would be the last time. As I shaved my beard, I promised to take good care of myself, and I swore that no matter what happened, I would never allow madness to consume me. I sat down on a chair in the room to await surgery. 2 nurses talked loudly at the desk outside the room. They said there would be hell to pay when healthy tissue was sent down to the pathology lab. They said sooner or later this would blow up and there'd be trouble. A nurse came in the room, smiled, and dipped her head shyly. She pointed to a gurney in the hall. "Can I walk?" I asked her. She shook her head. I lay on the gurney as she rolled it down the hall. All I could see were ceilings. Huge lights appeared over me. I was in surgery. Masked faces above me. I hoped they weren't too hostile. "Which one of you is Dr. Constanza?" I asked. One of them answered, "He's on vacation. Don't worry." I started to protest, but a needle pierced my arm and the room started to dissolve. When I awoke, the world seemed fuzzy. I couldn't focus. The man in the bed across from mine stared at me. Nurses peered at me from the doorway. I fought for consciousness. A priest came into the room. "Where is she?" He looked around. "Who?" I asked. The room spun. The priest came close to my bed. "There's a lost soul who needs my help," he whispered. "They just wheeled her down the hall, Father," I said, pointing. "If you hurry, you can catch her." I tried to sit up. A dull pain pounded in my chest. I called out to the nurses standing in the doorway. "Can I get something for the pain?" They walked away. One of the nurses came back. "Look," she said, "I don't understand any of this, but I can tell you this hospital is for sick people. You people make some arrangement with Constanza on the side, that's your business. But this bed and our time is for sick people." How much time would they give me to recuperate? An hour? 2? I didn't want to be there another minute. I wanted to be safe in my own home. I swung my legs over the bed and tested standing on them. Once I felt steady, I carefully dressed. It took forever for the elevator to arrive. I stepped inside and pushed the button for the lobby. The young nurse who had brought me down for surgery held the elevator door open and pressed something into my hand. It was for Darwin, wrapped in a paper towel. "I'm sorry," she whispered. I had to walk a long way from the bus to my house. When I finally got home, I put in my key, but remembered the door needed to be pulled inward as the key was turned. When I finally pulled hard enough to turn the key, I knew I had hurt myself a little, but I was home. I lay down on my bed. The last thing I remember is wondering what day it was. When I woke up, I couldn't figure out where I was. A dull pain throbbed in my chest. I stood up carefully. When I opened the closet door, I saw myself reflected in the full-length mirror mounted inside. I could tell from my beard growth I had slept for days. My chest was bandaged. There it was, the body I'd wanted. I wondered why it had to have been so hard. I stumbled into the kitchen and chucked a Pepsi. I found a slice of cold pepperoni pizza and a piece of chocolate cake in the refrigerator. My childhood dream breakfast. I called Edwin's house. "We're sorry," I listened to the recording in shock, "but the number you dialed has been disconnected." I rang her sister's house. In a quavering voice, Edwin's sister said, "She shot herself weeks ago." I put the receiver down gently, trying not to disturb Ed's memory. "Edwin, Ed," I whispered as though she was asleep in my arms and I could wake her. I went back to the bedroom and lost consciousness. When I woke, I hoped Edwin's death was just a dream. I called my foreman. "Where the hell you been, boy?" he shouted. "I've been sick, real sick." "Can you get a doctor's note?" I stopped and thought for a moment. "No," I said. "You're fired," he growled and hung up. I slept on and off for several days. A nagging pain woke me up, but it was emotional, not the result of the surgery. I changed my bandages in the bathroom. Just two surgical lines across my chest. Together with the stitches, they looked like railroad tracks. After a little more than a week, it looked like it was healing pretty well. I pulled on a clean white t-shirt. Something propelled me into the kitchen to get a beer. As I snapped off the cap, I located the source of the pain. Edwin's suicide. It couldn't be true that Ed no longer existed in the world. How could she be gone? Hadn't I known she was seething inside? I remembered she said she'd marked a page in the book she gave me that summed up what she was struggling with. I tore through the books on my shelf, but I couldn't find the slim volume she'd given me. I finally discovered it in an unpacked box in my hall closet and sat down on the floor to leaf through the book. She'd marked the page in blue ink. "It's a peculiar sensation, this double consciousness, the sense of always looking at oneself through the eyes of others, of measuring one's soul by the tape of a world that looks on in amused contempt and pity. One ever feels his two-ness, an American, a Negro, two souls, two thoughts, two unreconciled strivings, two warring ideals in one dark body, whose dogged strength alone keeps it from being torn asunder." I looked at the inscription, the way she dotted the I in her name with an inky heart. Pain roared through my body like a fire whipped by the wind. "Ed," I cried out loud, "please come back. Give me another chance to understand. I'll be a better friend if you'll just come back." Silence. One beer followed another. I got pretty drunk. And then I broke down and cried for the loss of Edwin and for all the tears I'd suppressed since I lost Teresa. I went for a walk and ended up on a bus headed to the amusement park. I wanted to win one of those big stuffed bears that Teresa always loved. First, I thought I needed more beer. The two young women behind the concession counter whispered and giggled as I approached. "Can I help you, sir?" the dark-haired one asked me. "A beer." I pulled out my wallet. The red-haired woman nudged her and giggled. "Tell him." "Tell me what?" I asked. "She thinks you're cute," the dark-haired woman pushed. "I do not. She's just a jerk." My face flushed. I walked away from the counter without the beer. A powerful rage rose inside me. Why was I so angry? This was what I wanted, wasn't it? To be able to be myself and yet live without fear? It just didn't seem fair. All my life I'd been told everything about me was really twisted and sick. But if I was a man, I was cute. Acceptance of me as he felt like an ongoing indictment of me as a he-she. I obsessed about winning the bear for Theresa. As I threw the baseballs at those dolls on the shelf, I could feel a few stitches on my chest tear, but I didn't care. I pitched in a frenzy. I kept putting money down on the counter and the man kept taking it. A small crowd formed. The prizes I won got a little bigger each time, but I couldn't seem to knock down a couple of those dolls. "Sorry, pal," the guy behind the counter told me. His teeth were clenched on a cigar. I handed him $5. "Here," I said real loud, "you take my money and I'll show the people here which dolls are weighted." He swung around and handed me a giant pink bear. "I want the blue one," I told him. "Fuck you," he muttered, but he exchanged it. As I bolted up the recess stairs that night, I felt excited. By the time I knocked, I was scared. A young woman with a soft butch exterior answered the door. I stood there with a big blue bear in my arms. She called Theresa. Theresa stood outside her door to talk to me, but she left it ajar. "How are you?" I asked her. She shrugged. I beckoned with my chin toward the door. "Housekeeping, Butch?" It was a mean-spirited thing to say. I was glad she didn't respond. There was a long silence, then Theresa turned to go. I whispered Edwin's name out loud as tears ran down my cheeks. Theresa wheeled around and threw her arms around me. She knew. She understood. She held me while I choked on my tears. I sniffled and looked at my boots. She watched my face. There were tears in her eyes too. She touched the stubble on my cheek with her fingertips. I couldn't read her thoughts. I never could. It was time to leave. "You working?" I asked her. "Some," she said. She touched my cheek again and turned to go. "Theresa," I called her name. She looked at me. "Does she sit between the rows in your garden?" Theresa shook her head. "No, Jess, you're the only one." I picked up the big blue bear and extended it to her. She smiled sadly and shook her head. Then the door shut and she was gone. I walked a couple of blocks to the supermarket and stood outside the automatic doors. After a while, this little kid came by, holding onto his mother's hand. He stared at the bear as I approached and then turned to watch it as he walked by. His mother sort of dragged him along before she turned to see what he was looking at. "Is it okay?" I asked her, nodding toward the bear. She looked surprised, but she nodded. I handed the bear to the boy. "Take good care of her, promise?" he nodded. His arms could hardly get around the stuffed animal. His mother nudged his shoulder. "Say thank you to the nice man."